What's shit?
Go ahead, Gogs.
Welcome to the Movie Podcast. That's right, Movie the Podcast. It is August, and we watched Nicolas Cage's Pig, a film with a pig in it, kind of, and
pigs in it very briefly.
Not too bad. Not a bad film in my humble estimation. Alex here. TJ's here. Sean
is sucking his dad's dick.
We just need a button for that.
He is taking the fucking finish off that thing. That thing has gotten like just sores. It's just
right. Take the chrome off a trailer hitch.
Yep.
Wasn't that like basketball or something where that was like
some movie like
yeah.
Those.
Yeah.
He was like literally sucking a golf ball through a hose or something. Like,
I think it was basketball. That joke in that movie that I always remember is when they imply that Matt and Trey's dicks are like feet and feet long.
When they swing quickly and they fly past them.
Isn't there a shot from between their legs where you just see like the neck?
Yeah. And
she throws the file folder on the ground and they're both like,
oh, yeah. Flinch.
What a great movie.
And what's her name? She just uses the term long wanger and that has always stuck with me.
Yeah. That movie is
and then she's like, throbbing cock. I don't even know what I'm saying
anymore.
You kids with your punk rock music and Dan Fogelberg.
Yeah,
Fogelberg. That's a classic. You kids at home don't understand. You 40-year-old kids that listen to this show. All right. Yeah, we watched Pig. A movie, spoiler alerts for TJ, that I have changed my opinion on this film. So
it's a real crawl.
Second time this year, I think. But yeah, we'll get into that in a little bit. What did you all watch in the last 2 weeks? Alec!
I watched Seven Things.
Oh my god.
Yeah. Old business first, watch Dodgeball. Dodgeball's great. Mm-hmm. Dodgeball still holds up all the way across. There's a few jokes on there you can't really get away with anymore, but overall, most of the jokes all still hold up. And there's really very little compared to a lot of movies from that time frame that would get you canceled now.
I feel like Vince Vaughn had that, like, it was like analogous to like Nick Cage's like Face Off, Con Air, The Rock. Like for a minute there, Vince Vaughn was just the comedic go-to.
Vaughn was great. He's still great.
Then he made The Internship.
Oh yeah.
Watched a couple of Melissa McCarthy movies. One called Tammy, which was fine. She's doing her typical Melissa McCarthy thing in that she's a fast food worker who gets cheated on by her husband. So her and her grandmother go on a cross country trip to see Niagara Falls, but they go the wrong way and end up hijinks ensue across the country.
I love hijinks.
It's better than fine. It's got Susan Sarandon plays her grandmother. Gary Cole's in it. Mark Duplass is in it. They're both really good. Allison Janney plays her mom. It's better than fine. It's not great, but it's better than fine. Came out like
better than fine. Raves Alec.
Yeah, I like
it's
better
one
than
of the.
Fine.
It's one of the movies that her husband directed. Because they work together a lot.
Yeah.
Ben something. I can't remember his name.
Bridesmaids?
Yeah, he shows up in a bunch of the movies.
Not Ben Schwartz.
No, I can't think of it either.
The other Melissa McCarthy movie we watched, which is a certified A+ banger, is The Heat.
I love that movie. Yeah, that movie's
Sandra
great.
Bullock. That movie fucking slaps. Like, that's the movie that I turned a corner on Melissa McCarthy with. Because before that, all I'd seen her was like a random episode of that Mike and Molly show, which was horrific.
Oh God.
And I think there's some movie I saw her in. Oh, and Bridesmaids. And I didn't find her that funny in Bridesmaids. I thought she was kind of dull compared to the rest of the cast. The Heat is fucking tremendous.
Yeah, The Heat's really good.
Paul Feig vehicle. And most of the stuff he does is really good.
I think that's his best movie though, by far. Like, I think that's his like tight. I think that my problem with Paul Feig movies is like, they have a tendency of just kind of rambling on and on and on. I feel like The Heat doesn't really have that problem.
No.
John Cena Awkwafina thing is Paul Feig, isn't it?
I want to watch that.
It is. It's called Jackpot. Did you watch that? I watched it. Yeah.
How was that? I wanted to watch that. It looked good.
Stepping on my dick. It's really good. It's tremendous. Like, I thought it was fantastic.
Apparently it had another title. Because the internet calls it Grand Death Lotto.
That's a much better title.
It's fantastic. They're both so good in it. Simu Liu is in it as a bad guy, and he's fantastic.
Oh, he's awesome. Second movie we've seen him in this year where he's a bad guy, because he was in that Jennifer Lopez robot movie, remember?
I didn't watch that one. I missed one.
Oh, I wouldn't say you missed it, buddy.
But it's set in the very near future, where like you enter a lottery in California, and if you win, you get whatever, like billions of dollars. But the rest of the people who entered the lottery have 24 hours to kill you, and whoever kills you gets the money if they kill you. So then it bred this like underground business sector of protection for people who win the lottery. And John Cena is one of those protectors, and she gets hired by Awkwafina after she realized, because she doesn't understand what's going on at first, because she had just moved back to California, which this is really the stupidest point of the whole movie, is that if that happened in any state, everybody would be fully aware of it, but she's like has no clue what's going on.
Yeah.
Doesn't really make any sense. But once you get past that, it's fucking fantastic. I thought it was great. John Cena's so good in it. I
need to watch it because
John Cena is just like,
oh, he's the best.
He's the best wrestling actor. Like, by far. Well, I don't know. Batista's really good too, but Batista does a lot more artsy.
I would give it to Cena. I would
comedic
say
acting, John Cena's got it covered.
I feel like if you gave him a dramatic role, he would be really good.
Well, his dramatic parts of Peacemaker were great. He's good. He's legitimately very good at this.
I think he's very
good. I would recommend Jackpot a lot. I thought it was fantastic. I loved it.
Yeah, I need to watch it.
Doug was down really visiting a couple of weeks ago. We watched it. Doug loved it too.
Is that Prime original?
Yes.
Yeah, I really need to watch it. Cause it sounds like a comedy version of like, what's that movie I like? Series 7. Like, it sounds very similar in premise to that.
Do you think Liz would like it? Like, do you think we could watch it together?
I mean, I think so. If she liked like Bridesmaids and stuff like that, like.
She did.
There's a lot of similar humor. Paul Feig directed Bridesmaids too. Like, I would agree with TJ. It probably rambles a little long in some places, but it didn't bother me.
Yeah.
But if she doesn't mind the gore, there's like some really gory parts with some gory like kills and protections that are fucking violent. But overall, it's a lot of fun.
Finally. I look forward to watching it. I'm excited now because I saw it come out and, the poster that I saw was phenomenal. You know me. You get a good poster and I'm already like, okay. And then I saw a teaser trailer and I mean, I like Awkwafina in general. I know she's a little polarizing, but I like her. And,
overexposed. I
love Cena and yeah, I still love that. I think I'm like the biggest dick rider in the world for that fucking, that sad Awkwafina movie where she, The Farewell, I think it's called, where she goes to China.
I've never seen that.
It's really good. I really like that movie.
Like, I've heard nothing but like great things about it. Like, she's phenomenal, but
it's excellent.
I don't know if I can handle that.
It's very good. It's like, I feel like it's one of those movies. I feel like I'm the only person that's ever seen it, but I thought she was great at it. Anything else, Monsieur Alec?
Oh, yeah. A couple more. We watched My Spy, The Eternal City, the sequel to Dave Bautista's My Spy from a few years ago.
Speaking also of wrestling actors.
Also a Prime original. Not that great. I thought the original My Spy that they did was pretty fun and like kind of a different, refreshing turn on like the kid and the kid and like the adult protector story where he's like the CIA agent. She's the little kid that, he ends up having to protect because she finds out a secret. This one's just kind of meh. Like, it's fine. It's not terrible. Batista's good in it. Everybody's pretty good in it. The story's just kind of meh and just kind of rambles on too long. Yeah,
the trailer looked kind of, it looked very generic. When I saw the trailer, I was like, oh, okay.
And the bad guy, Anna Faris plays the bad guy, and Anna Faris is not menacing or anything at all.
I can't see that.
At all. All I could ever see her as is, whatever her name is from Scary Movie.
Right, yeah.
I guess that's my fault, but it's been like 25 years and that's all I can still see her as. I can't remember her character's name.
What was that movie she was in where she was like a Playboy bunny going to college? Do you remember?
The House Bunny.
Yeah, the House Bunny.
Yeah, that was, I remember that being pretty funny.
I finally finished Deadpool and Wolverine.
Ah.
After like four different attempts.
That doesn't sound good.
He was watching it on streams
over the course of a couple of weeks.
So it wasn't like you were so bored with it. It took you to get the slug through it. You were willing to go through this to watch the movie.
Yeah. Yes.
So it is an endorsement. Okay, go ahead.
It's it's fine. I liked it probably a little more than TJ. I still didn't like love it, which is disappointing. Deadpools are like, I love both of those.
Sounds very similar to how I felt.
But it's fine. I liked a lot of the, I liked a lot of the cameos. I liked seeing like the nostalgia bit to some of those people coming back. Real, I guess mostly Johnny Storm, even though it's only for a few minutes. But like him and Wesley Snipes being back is their guys and all the jokes with Chris Evans being back in the movie. I like that stuff. I thought they did a terrible job with Cassandra Nova. Not that the actress did a bad job.
Yeah.
But good. Like Cassandra Nova is like the baddest of the bad in the X-Men universe.
Yeah, she's just wasted in this movie. Like, I don't know why they picked her. I mean, of all the characters, like also, like her character is like needlessly like convoluted. And like to throw her in this movie, it's just like, eh. And they, you know, obviously they don't really give her time or explain her. And it's like, eh, like they just kind of, I don't know.
Yeah. Like,
I wish they didn't pick somebody else.
Are you familiar with Cassandra Nova, Gogs?
Not really. No.
She's Charles Xavier's twin sister who he killed in the womb because she tried to kill him in the womb.
Like psychically?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh my God. Then she like survived and grew up in the sewers or something and became a...
We love you, Grant Morrison.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Like he's so weird. She's
like an evil Professor X basically.
Basically, but she's the one who created the Wild Sentinels that obliterated Genosha and killed like all the mutants back in like the 2000s.
Yeah. Wow. If you ever want a good X-Men read, Gogs, I will lend you my omnibus of the Grant Morrison X-Men. That's where all this comes from. And it's really, really good.
It is really good. You just have to pretend you don't know anything about X-Men when you start reading it. It just starts off like on its own thing. Just assuming all you need to know is like these guys are X-Men and kind of the loose origins of everybody. But the Grant Morrison run's phenomenal. Even the last one was Taking Back Tomorrow or whatever.
Oh, I loved. Yeah, I loved the whole thing.
Like the Nightcrawler
artwork
clones.
Problem. Yeah.
But I thought Deadpool Wolverine, like, it was fine. Like, I guess my expectations were probably too high. I did love seeing X-23 again. I hope they bring her in for more stuff. Like, she's phenomenal.
Yeah, I thought she was
get her into the, I was reading the IMDb credits. One of the Deadpools, I don't know which one is which because they had so many and the names don't matter to me.
Right.
Like, super Deadpool fans might know, but one of them was Tom Holland's brother.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that until I was reading the thing about it today.
I saw a still. It's one of those things where you wouldn't be able to see it unless somebody paused it. But one of the Deadpools is dressed up like Hugh Jackman in The Greatest Showman. And I thought that was hilarious. But like, you could, you know what I mean? Like, it's not, they don't, he doesn't have prominent screen time. He's like literally in the background. But I was like, that's funny as hell.
Yeah. I mean, I'd recommend people give it a watch if you like Marvel stuff. Like, there's enough there to probably entertain most people for a while. I'd love to see more Gambit. I'd love to see more X-23. Elektra, who gives a fuck? Like,
yeah.
Who could possibly, like, they couldn't get Ben Affleck. They had to get Jennifer Garner.
Yeah.
But they were married at one point. Why weren't they? I wonder if they had to pick one or the other.
Well, they even make a joke about their divorce because they mentioned like something about, oh, where's Daredevil? And she's like, oh, he's dead. It's like, I'm sorry. She's like, yeah, it's not that bad or something like that.
The last movie I watched was actually the second movie directed by the guy whose movie we watched this week, Pig. I forget his name. I watched A Quiet Place 3.
The newest one.
It is fantastic.
Yeah.
Is it? I loved it. It's a smaller, well, I guess they're all kind of smaller stories because there's only so many people. This one really just features two people and a cat. And it's fucking fantastic. Lupita Nyong'o is incredible in it. Joseph Quinn is also incredible in it. The two of them are really good together. The cat's really good. There's really nobody else of note in it. The only other person I recognized was the kid from this movie. I can't remember his name.
Alex Wolf
Winter?
Well, no, Alex Winter, I think, is a blues guitar player.
Yeah.
Oh, no, yeah, that's Billy from Bill and Ted, yeah.
He's in it for a few minutes.
Is Digimon Hansu in this?
Goes down.
Yes.
Yeah, he's not in it very long, though. But this is a prequel to all of them, obviously, since it says day one in the title. But I thought it was fantastic. I thought it was really good.
You've liked all three of them, right? Like, I remember you saying the second one was real good. I never
saw two.
Yeah,
I've loved all three of them. And like, watching Pig and the way he worked, this director works with sound really well. Could see why he worked really well with A Quiet Place. With having some scenes with like no sound and then some scenes with like really hushed sound, but still getting like a lot out of your actors. Cause there's a lot of parts in Pig where all you hear is like white noise, basically, or like background noise.
Yeah. I didn't realize he directed it. His name is Michael Sanorsky. Michael Sanorsky.
I didn't notice it until I went to see what else he had directed, and that's it. Just these two movies. And then some short.
Huh.
These are his only two features. It's a big jump. Go from a neon movie Pig to A Quiet Place.
To a major, major franchise film. I think it did really well, too. I'm pretty sure it did pretty well.
The other thing I watched, that's all the movies I watched. I watched the final season of Umbrella Academy. And
is it as bad as everyone says it is?
Man, what a fucking letdown.
Yeah, that's what everybody's saying.
Like, which is really, like, really disappointing. Because season one and season three are, like, full-on phenomenal. And season two is really good. But like, they had it built up for something. But, like, I don't understand why they shortened the season. I'm sure. I mean, I understand. It's Netflix's money. I'm sure they...
Yeah.
Cut the budget back, but they shortened the season from 10 to 6 episodes. Like, the plot makes no sense. There's characters from other seasons that they just don't even mention, like, as having even been around anymore. Mm-hmm. It's just fucking wild and sloppy and very disappointing for a show that I fucking loved. Like, seasons 1 through 3, like, I absolutely think are almost perfect.
Yeah, I mean, that's the consensus. Like, that's all I kept hearing is how bad it was. I'm like, that's a shame.
Yeah, it's very disappointing.
I've only ever watched the first season, and now, like, now that it ends so weak, I'm like, do I need to, should I invest my time in watching the other ones? I don't know.
Yeah, which is sad for, like, people like you like that, cause, like, seasons two and three are fucking bangers, like, absolute bangers.
Well, it's one of those things where it's like, you know, you think about, like, Game of Thrones, and it's like, well, if I never went into it at first, would I go into it now? You know what I mean? Like, is it like,
Yep, no, I understand, but. Yeah, it was very disappointing. The whole time, like, we were watching, just waiting for it to, like, get good. And then by, like, the last episode, I was like, oh, I guess this is just it. Like, this is, there's really no more time for it to get good. It's just kind of, here we go. Here's your.
That's a shitty feeling.
I've seen that, that TikTok a whole bunch with the Nathan For You. It's like, I hope you're ready for nothing. Or I hope you're hungry for nothing or whatever it is he says. I was like, that's exactly how I felt.
Not to tie it into Game of Thrones, but I mean, that feeling, I remember about the second to last episode of the last season of Game of Thrones, that's like settled in with me. I'm like, oh, this is going to be real bad. Like when Daenerys just turns evil for no friggin' reason, you're like, oh.
Yeah, you're like, oh, this is. There's no time. Like,
yeah, there's right. They're done. It's the fourth quarter. It's over.
It's it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very disappointing. I did watch the first part of the last season of Cobra Kai, and that show's still a bonkers, wild bananas karate fest.
Love that.
But this is the last season of that, and they're breaking it into like three parts, which like three like five episode parts. Like, they put this shit all out at once, man. Like, if it's all done already. Like, what are you waiting for?
What's the difference? Yeah.
I guess trying to get, like, subscription bumps later on, but I don't understand. Like, I don't understand how Netflix works, period.
Yeah. I don't understand any of the money, but yeah, I don't understand any of the subscription models, to be perfectly honest.
But whatever. Yeah, that's it. TJ.
Ooh, I watched two pieces of crap. The first thing I watched was the bigger piece of crap. I watched 2024's The Crow.
Oh.
And like, I gotta say, man, like, I know like this year, especially, I guess specifically this summer has been like really rough. Like, it's like I, like Borderlands and then this, and it's just like, it's the same movie. Like, it's just so soulless and boring and like, I don't understand, you know, I understand wanting to remake The Crow, right? Like the film was very popular. To this day, people still, you know, the iconography of The Crow is very popular in culture. And I understand the idea of wanting to remake that or to like, I don't know, to like introduce a new generation to The Crow or whatever.
But well, like, you understand the reason to monetize it and make the money. You don't understand the reason to remake it.
I mean, potato, potato, dude. I mean, movies, you make movies to make money. I get it. I mean, it's whatever. Hopefully the money part and the art part come together, but I mean, I get it. My
point there's no is, art, there's no art reason to remake it.
I don't necessarily agree with that. In the right hands, if somebody, so that's my point. I'll concede your point. If you're going to remake it, have an idea. Do something with it, right? Like, do something different, make it closer to the comic book, or go completely out of left field. Like, not that I'd want to see this, but apparently at one point, this is like way, way back in the day. This is like before, like, the third Crow movie and Wicked Prayer and all that crap. Rob Zombie was going to make like a futuristic Crow movie. And like, I know Rob, it would have sucked because Rob Zombie sucks, but like, it's an idea.
It's an idea.
It's different. You know what I mean? And this movie, like, it's just, there's nothing to it. Like, it's not, the Crow is like, the Crow character himself is very boring. He's like kind of weak. He doesn't become the Crow until literally 45 minutes into a 90 minute movie. So it's like, what the fuck? And then like I guess the one big difference between this movie and the original, well, besides the original is great and this is a piece of shit, is that they try to flesh out Shelley and Eric's relationship, but like it doesn't really work and I still don't care about them. Like I get what you're trying to do, but it doesn't pay off. And I still, by the time like they both die, I still don't know anything about them at all. And it's just really bad. And then the villain, and I love, Danny Houston. I think he's a great actor. See the Proposition. I brought that movie up 1,000 times on the show. He's amazing in that movie. But man, if you see Danny Houston in like a mainstream movie, it's probably going to be bad. He was Stryker in X-Men Origins Wolverine. That comes to mind. He was I can't think of his name. He was a real life general in World War One. He was the bad guy in Wonder Woman. Like, the guy's great, but like if he shows up, like run for the hills. Cause like in this movie, in The Crow, he plays this guy who's like this like millionaire dude who's been around forever. And you find out that he made a deal with the devil to like live forever if he feeds the devil's souls. And it's like, what the fuck am I watching? Like the original Crow, one of the things that works well about the original Crow is that it's like an I Am Legend situation, right? Like the Crow comes back and he is just fucking up these street thugs and they are outmatched. They don't know how to deal with him. You know what I mean? They're like freaking out. They're basically pissing their pants through the whole movie. And it's cool because aside from Bai Ling's like weird spiritual thing, like they don't have any kind of understanding of like the mythical nature of the Crow, right? They're just kind of dealing with the situation.
They just happened to like, they happened to kill a guy for it was a land deal. Like it was just, they're just in the way of big business. Was it big business? Is that what he called himself? Is that what Wingcott's name was? Big time?
Top dollar.
Top dollar. Right. Top like dollar. He was just trying to acquire like, property to make money. And then Eric Draven just got in the way. Like he was, it was like a classic. It was
capitalism.
Capitalism for you, it was the worst day of your life, but for me, it was a Tuesday. Like, it didn't make a difference.
But it works because it wouldn't have worked if Top Dollar was, like, an evil wizard, right?
That did kind of work in number two, though.
Yeah, but number two is great for a lot of different reasons. But anyway, so this movie, like, Eric fights, like, Satan's buddy, and it's like two mythical beings fighting, and it just doesn't work. And there's nothing that works about this movie. And again, like the worst thing about it is it's just dull as shit. It's so fucking boring. And even when he becomes the Crow, he's like not capable Crow. Like he's kind of like the first two people he kills, he kind of kills by accident. And it's like, I don't want to watch this. Like I want to watch the badass guy. You know what I mean? I don't want to watch a guy that's like fumbling around. Like I just don't understand this movie. Like it's a huge bomb. Like it deserves to be a huge bomb. It's terrible. I hated it. It's awful. I also watched Alien Romulus. And I hated that too.
I feel like that's getting good buzz.
Yeah, people are idiots. I'm sorry. The movie is trash. It's so like, it's funny because I wish Sean was on, but when Sean and I watched the trailer, I forget what movie we were watching, but when we saw the trailer in the theater, we're like, that looks pretty good, but it looks like Alien's greatest hits. And that's what the movie is. Like, it's just, there's like, the first half an hour of the movie is fucking great. And I was like, wow, okay, they're doing something. Like, it's like, they show like what planet side life is like in the Aliens universe, which is cool. Like they're on a Weyland-Yutani like mining planet that's like really shitty. And I'm like, this is neat. Like this is a new thing. We've never really seen this before in Alien movies. And then you got these like scrappy kids that are trying they found like a signal of this derelict spaceship and they're gonna steal these cryopods so they can go to this other planet, this like good planet. But they need the cryopods to survive the space trek or whatever. Good premise. Easy enough to follow. The characters are a little one note, but like I was still with it. You know what I mean? Like I was there and I was like, okay, I'm in. This is interesting. It's a good horror movie premise too, which is fundamental to Alien, right? Like you're going into this derelict spaceship. You don't know what's going on. Like I'm in. I like it. There's enough characters where you're like, okay, you got some fodder characters in here that are going to get it. Like, I'm there. I'm in. You have the best character in the whole movie is the shit. What do they call androids in Aliens? Synths. So you have a synth that is basically like autistic because like he's like defective, but like the main character's dad found him basically thrown away and built and fixed him up. So like he basically like can like hardly function. I'm like, that's an idea. I like that idea. Like that's kind of cool. Cause like he's still capable. Like he can get into like Whale and Yutani ships because he's a synthetic, but like he's basically like, again, he's like autistic. I'm like, this is good. I like all of this. And does anybody care if I spoil like a little bit of the movie?
Not in the least.
You can't spoil an Alien movie between Alien and Aliens for me. I know how it turns out.
This movie goes sideways, literally about a half an hour in, because for some fucking reason, when they get to the research center in this spaceship, it's actually not a spaceship. I'm sorry. It's a, what do you call it? A space station. There is a CGI Ian Holm there. Ian Holm from the first film. He played Ash in the first movie. So, but it's like CGI. It's like, why? And then you find out, like, cause I was like, okay, well, Ash dies in Alien 1, and this takes place between Alien 1 and Aliens. Because remember, Gogs knows this, but remember, after Alien, Ripley goes into the cryo sleep and she's asleep for like 80 years.
57.
Okay, thank you. But my point is, it's between those two. Cause the whole idea is that blows the alien out of the hatch. And this space station grabbed that alien and is doing research on it. So anyway, they introduced this CGI Ian Holm, and he's not even Ash. He's another robot named Rook. So it's like, why is it a CGI Ian Holm? It looks so fucking bad. His fucking mouth doesn't match what he says. And I'm sorry. Like, I think it's just in bad taste because Ian Holm is dead. And it's
I'm not trying to defend a movie I haven't seen, right?
Go ahead.
But like the whole Weyland Yutani bit is that all the synths look the same.
Just make it another synth, dude. We've already got David. The autistic synth in this movie is not the same actor. It's a new model. Okay. Like, can you just?
I mean, I'm saying there's multiple bishops. That's all I'm saying.
I mean, I get all that, but like my point, it could Lance Hendrickson's still alive. Make it fucking Lance Hendrickson. Like. Yeah. I'm just saying it's so dumb. And then the movie just, as soon as that character shows up, the movie just fucking goes to shit. Because the movie after everything that's original happens in the first half an hour. And then the rest of the movie is just a fucking, do you remember this fest? It's like, they gotta fucking show her shoes. They bring back the fucking black goo from Prometheus. And I'm just like, I want to fucking die. What happened to this movie? Like, it's just, everything is just a fucking reference back to old Aliens. Like at one point he says like, get away from her, bitch. And it's like, I want to die. Stop just make your own fucking movie. Stop with this fucking never ending fucking reference cycle that is a movie nowadays. Like it's so frustrating, dude. The first half hour is so good. And then it's just like, hey, let's recreate this scene. Let's recreate this scene. Let's recreate this scene. It's like, I've already seen those fucking scenes. I've seen Aliens, an Alien a million fucking times. I love those movies. I don't need the scenes recreated. Also, if like you follow the logic of the fucking Alien movies, like a lot of the shit doesn't make any sense. Cause like there's the you know how like in Aliens, they have the walls where the people are in there and they like kind of like cocoon them in there. Well, there's never a queen in this movie, so how the fuck did that happen? And like, I just, it's so frustrating. And then to make matters worse, they fucking refer back to the goddamn alien human hybrid thing from Alien Resurrection. And I'm just looking for the shotgun. I'm just like, what the fuck? And to make like, what's funny is the thing is like freakish looking. And then I found out that like, there's this basketball player. I think he's like a high school or college kid and he's literally like 8'9" or something. And he looks freakish and he plays the, alien thing at the end of the movie.
But, wait a minute. If there's no queen, how do they have all the... Like, because facehuggers are all over this thing. Okay.
I don't know. But I'm so happy that the fucking black goo had to show up, so I got the... And the fucking... one of the worst lines in the whole goddamn movie is Ian Holmes, when the fucking black goo shows up, he literally says over it, it's like, I was trying to save mankind. I was trying to elevate mankind, like Prometheus stole fire from the gods. And it's like, you don't have to save fucking Prometheus, man. We get it. Like, oh, I wanted to walk out. I was like, oh, the movie is like, if you're not bothered by just like blatant, like pandering and just unoriginality, you might love the movie. Again, there's a good movie in here. If you like rewrote this and you're like, hey, I want to make a story about these kids, it could have been good. And also it's got Return of the King syndrome, because the movie ends and then it's like, oh wait, we need to recreate the fucking Ripley underwear scene from Alien and then have that go over again, because that fucking goes on forever. Fede Alvarez can suck my balls. He sucks. He's made two shitty remakes. I don't care what anybody says. His Evil Dead remake is trash. This is trash. I liked Don't Breathe, but, that's all I watched. Gogs.
I don't know what I watched. me and the kids continue to work our way through all of the Marvel movies. So I forget if last time I was on, we'd watch Civil War, but we watched Civil War. That movie rules.
Oh yeah, it's great.
We just keep watching Guardians 1 and 2, and I'm not mad at it. We gotta watch Thor Ragnarok. I'm looking forward to coming back to that.
What order are you watching them in? Are you just randomly?
We're trying to watch them in the correct order. Vance wants to get to Guardians of the Galaxy 3. So I'm trying to watch them.
We only got 20 more movies to go.
Yeah, right.
So we still have to watch, just to make, I guess, to make it sense canonically. We've seen Black Panther. I think we need to watch, I think the next one is, we need to watch Ragnarok. Then after Ragnarok, we can watch we can watch Civil War. Then we can watch Captain Marvel. And then we can watch Endgame. And then we can watch Guardians 3. We might skip Ant-Man and Wasp. I'm not sure. I guess we need to watch Ant-Man and Wasp, because that's a crucial part between Infinity War and Endgame. So I guess we've got Ragnarok. We've got like 5 movies. We've watched everything else up until that point.
Yeah, that's a shame. Those Ant-Man movies are fun, but it's a shame you got to watch them just to
understand the conceit
just
of Endgame.
Just to understand how Endgame works.
Yeah.
You watch two whole-ass movies. Was just watched, like, 1 2-minute scene.
I mean, he liked Ant-Man. He liked the first one. And, like you said, Civil War is a ton of fun. That movie is really good. What's his name? Who plays Zemo?
Oh,
Daniel Brühl.
Stephen Brühl.
Dr. Stephen Brühl.
That was Steve Brühl. Zemo is he's a great bad guy. Like, that, his whole plan is awesome. Like, his whole character arc is great. I put him up there with Vulture as far as like underrated Marvel bad guys, whose motivations you can actually understand.
And they didn't actually kill.
So yeah, he's dead. Zemo's
show up
dead.
Again.
He's not dead.
No, he's not.
Oh wait, no, he stops him from killing himself.
He's not dead.
He's in the Falcon and Winter Soldier show.
That's right. Yeah. That's right.
And that show,
he was gonna
flat.
That show was great.
I never watched that show. I should.
It's really good. It's one of the better things they've done in the last few years.
It's so much overload.
It's too much.
And I'm
yeah, they're finally backing off.
Yeah, now. About time.
Like, it was a fun little period with shows and stuff, but it did get to be too much, and now they understand, and they're like, no, we'll pare it back a little bit. But some of the shit they have coming out, I don't care about at all. Oh, like, I don't care about an Agatha Harkness show.
I don't care about
that's
that either.
Like that's on like Madam Web levels. I'm sure it won't be as bad as Madam Web, but that's like,
yeah, I don't.
Those,
I mean,
the obscure characters.
The character was
well, that's Sony, so I guess it's a little different. But bleh.
Agatha was fun in the Vision show or the Scarlet Witch show, but like, that's not a character I want to watch a whole show about. Now, Daredevil Born Again, I can't fucking wait. That's going to be incredible. So.
Yeah. I hope they get Elektra back in that. They have the whole gang back together from that season two Daredevil.
I think they will. I'm excited. I'm really, really excited for that.
Sorry, guys.
That's all good. I also watched half, and I don't know if I'm going to go back to it or not, but I watched half of Humane, which I think TJ watched.
Yeah, I did not like that movie.
Yeah, it's all right. It's
I think it would have been better if any of the other Cronenbergs directed it.
Well, we've established that David Cronenberg's a hack, so we've ruled it down to one Cronenberg at this point.
Well, you like Brandon.
Like Brandon. Brandon Cronenberg's great. I'll finish it up, but it was like what I've seen thus far, it's not really doing it. I do like the fact that the young lady who plays Stevie Budd from Schitt's Creek is in the movie. And it's got what's his name, How to Train Your Dragons in it, and he's insufferable in this. I'm hoping that he's the one that dies. And what's his name? It's not Scott Adsit. It's the guy from, Galaxy Quest.
It's like Enrique. He's got a Hispanic name. I can't remember it though.
The one that's, that guy.
Yeah, Balthazar,
exactly. I'll finish it up, but it's not boding well. But that's it. That's everything I watched.
All right. Well,
Enrico Colantoni.
Colantoni. What a name.
Colin. Colantoni.
Colantoni. It's got two first names for a last name. Mr. Goggs.
For one special.
What happened in Pig?
Let me tell you something about Pig.
Listening.
This movie is weird and quiet and slow
and sad
and like deliberate. And Sean, my phone's charging, so I don't have his critique, but I think one of Sean's critiques is actually a critique in the film. So I was interested about why he said what he said, but we'll get to that in the end. Movie opens.
Sean don't think about no movies.
No, he didn't look at it. Like,
I mean, he gave it an 8 out of 10. I mean,
right, but his one critique about how it's a critique.
No, I don't mean
fine...
Sean didn't think the movie was good. I said Sean didn't think good about movies.
Oh, wow.
His comment about how he hates like how like fine dining is elevated to an art form and all the pretension. I thought that was a critique of this film, like as like.
Yeah, I think that was Nick Cage literally what the whole movie
says as much, right?
I mean, that's also how I took it. Yeah.
I think kind of felt like no one will think about you. No one will remember you. Do what you love. Don't do this shit.
It kind of felt like on the same level as like the menu. Yeah. You know, the menu kind of plays with that and how absurd all that shit is. I took the same thing with this.
That's what I took. I was like, yeah, this is basically an indictment of that entire thing.
So
anyway.
What we're saying is he's a media illiterate and he's a fucking moron. So.
Well, I'd like to follow up with him on like what his, like the rationale behind his take, cause maybe I'm misunderstanding. Anywho, movie opens. We're in a shed. And
it is like the sheddiest of sheds too.
Nick Cage lives in a she shed, and I'm gonna put this out on Front Street. Nick Cage in this movie is
brilliant,
absolutely perfect.
Yeah, he's great. He's really good. And this is like understated Cage.
Like, oh my god! Like he is. I am blown away. Like this is like I like Nick Cage historically. Like I'm a Nick Cage defender. Don't get me wrong. But this performance is right up there with seeing Adam Sandler in Uncut Gems. Like, I didn't know this. I know he had this in him.
Yeah, and like, there's no, now that I think about it, like, there's no, you know, he's known for his, like, moments of freaking out. There's no, like, freak out scene.
He doesn't yell, I don't think.
No, yeah, that's what I'm saying. There's no, like, there's no yelling Cage in this
movie. Maybe in the first 15 minutes. So anyway, here, so we're in a shed. And Nick Cage is... You can tell he's a man of routine, right? And he looks like a fucking hobo, right? And he's going through the woods in Portland. You find out you're just outside of Portland. You're in
which is also
Pacific
perfect
Northwest.
For the setting of the movie. You know what I mean? Like hipster Portland.
And they like fuck Seattle, which I thought was hilarious. And he's there with his pig and they are hunting for truffles.
So and this is a real thing, right? Like there are truffle pigs.
Truffle pig is a correct. Yeah, that's a thing. Truffle might I add, is the most overused ingredient in all of fine dining, but
I don't even know if I've ever had.
You would know if you tasted it because everybody they do like truffle oil fries and
they are like, this and truffle they are mac. like a truffle is like, it's very, very expensive, right?
Yeah, it's incredibly expensive. Yeah. So like they go find the pig or the pig finds a truffle. He takes it back to his house and he just hangs out. And then you watch him just methodically make a tart or something. Just roll it, just making a pie crust, and he's cooking it over a wood fire, and he shares it with a pig. And then at this point, I don't know what century this movie is taking place in. And then, Alex Wolff from Hereditary and Jumanji, who is also excellent in this movie.
Yeah, he's really good.
Pulls up in his yellow, Camaro SS. And he basically like takes the, he exchanges, I don't even know if he gives him money, but he exchanges goods, like dry goods and, you know, pantry staples.
Also, real quick, a fun detail about him, and you can hear it, like it's diegetic. He is like loudly listening to classical music again to play into the whole like pretentious nature of like, the scene that he is part of.
Well, it's not even like he's just listening to classical music. He's listening to like how to listen to classical music on tape. Like there's like instructions like about how you should be listening to this. But anyway, he gets the truffle and he gives the stuff to Nick Cage and Nick Cage doesn't say a word to him, doesn't fucking acknowledge him barely. And the guy's like, all right, well, fuck you, Rob. I'll see you next week. And then Nick Cage goes and he takes, I guess Alex Wolff brought him, I don't know, 8 D-cell batteries and he puts them in his boombox and he starts to almost listen to this tape that says Robin's Mix and it's a woman's voice like laughing and then he can't deal with it and he turns it off. And now it's
also, pause real quick. This scene is also, it shows you how disgusting that shack is because he's like, hey, I can get you one of those like, remote showers and everything. He's like, nah, I don't want it. So like Nick Cage doesn't have like running water in this shack. Like
he is out there, man. So, and you don't know what his deal is. You know, his name is Rob and this is what he does.
Yeah.
So now it's nighttime. He says it's going to be coyotes. He locks it up. Him and the pig go to sleep. Middle of the night, there's a kerfuffle and then the movie like, and this is 10 minutes in, the movie takes a turn. The door gets kicked open. There's people who are trying to steal the pig. He tries to defend the pig with his knife. He gets cranked in the head. It basically turns into John Wick, but that's where the similarities kind of end.
Yeah. It has an action movie setup and then a dramatic, I don't even know what, like a drama following.
So I was reading, like, cause after I watched this movie, like, I was like kind of fascinated by it. So like last night after I finished it, I was like reading essays and other things about it. And, someone described, cause they described what I was thinking, like they put words to it, which is like, it's an anti-revenge movie. It is a movie where you, and a spoiler alert for the rest of the movie, but I'll tell you what happens anyway. Like you expect Rampage, you expect Nick Cage, I expected Mandy.
Right.
And he takes his wrath out on no one. This entire movie. It subverts every expectation you could possibly have.
In a few moments in the movie, if anything, violence is inflicted on him, not the other way around. Yeah.
So now his pig is gone. He wakes up the next morning. He's like, all right, well now we got to fucking figure this out. He fucking untarps his car. He starts it up somehow. It barely works. He hitchhikes into the nearest diner. He's asking, and this tells you how out of touch he is, right?
This scene, yeah.
There's like, is like, I forget what, is like, is Agnes, I forget what name he uses.
Yeah.
And the person's like, she died 10 years ago.
Right.
So he's been away from people for at least 10 years, right?
Probably so, more. Yeah.
Probably more. So he gets a hold of Alex Wolf and he's like, someone, Tweaker stole my pig. I need your help. They go to like a forest mushroom flea market. They talk to someone and she's like, oh, those are those fucking tweakers that we know those people. Here's how you get to them. They go to their little encampment, right? At this point, I figure, all right, well, this is when it's going to start happening, right?
Right.
Like,
right.
We're going to find out that Nick Cage was like an ex special forces, whatever. And the only way he's come to grips with his violent nature was that he has been spending the last 10 years in the woods hunting truffles with a pig, like Rambo-esque, right?
Right.
Sure. No. They go to these tweakers. They have a conversation with these meth heads. And then they like just leave. They just leave unmolested, unaccosted. Like yeah. They don't, no vengeance. Like I was like, burn the place down.
Do no vengeance.
Nothing. No vengeance. Right. And bear in mind, I'm about to give a movie with zero vengeance, my favorite emotion, an 8. So like, that's a pretty good movie. So then they're like, all right, well, we got to go figure out what the fuck. So now they go back to, and then you're introduced to this weird Portland underground, like culinary scene, right? Like people have wheelings and dealings and they go to like a waiter and waitress fight club in a basement.
Well, here's the thing that, and I don't know, maybe I'm reading too much into this movie, right? But like it's so, very few professions in this world get shit on as much as a wait staff.
Mm-hmm.
So it is exclusively, it's not a fight club as much as you have to be the workers, the wait staff and shit that get to pay to beat the fuck out of chefs. At least you assume it's just chefs. So I thought that was like a fun wrinkle too. Like I think that is very much intentional where it's they get to literally like beat out their fucking frustration with the higher ups. I thought that was a clever little thing.
And this is where you get the reveal that Rob's name is Robin Feld. And Robin Feld was this like, I don't even know.
It's like an Anthony Bourdain.
Right.
He's like a celebrity chef. Like he's a very well known, like well established chef. Like,
well, he's even like Bourdain doesn't even never consider himself to be that good. Like this guy is like a Jose Andres or like somebody that's like, right. So
a real Guy Fieri.
Well, like to the point where even disheveled, beat up and bloodied through the rest of the film, everyone still holds him with so much esteem and respect. It's nuts. So. He's using Alex Wolf to like, he's like, look, you gotta get me, we gotta find this fucking pig. Like, they're going through the trail. They go to this really super fancy restaurant. No one can get a table there. And they get a lunch table and they sits down and then there's like, I want to talk to, they eat like one bite of the food. He's like, I want to talk to the chef. Chef comes out. Then the guy realizes who it is. And that guy is like a sous chef, was a sous chef to Nick Cage's character. Nick Cage fired him and he basically just dresses dude down. But at the same time, and this is where the critique that I think Sean gave was interesting. He not only dresses dude down, but he's like, why are you doing this shit? You don't even like it. You have no passion for it. Why are you doing this for them? They don't care. They don't love you. Right. You also find out about Alex Wolf and his dad is like, I don't know, the emperor of dry goods. And he's got. But like, oh, here he is. Good. He heard us talking about him.
So that's another thing I wasn't quite like, I don't know anything about like restaurant procurement, but is this a thing where like there's like source, like, I don't know what the word would be.
It's like territoriality for like how you source.
But I mean,
right?
is there like a hierarchy of like sourcers? Like is that a thing? I didn't know.
I mean, like if you're dealing with stuff,
does it work that way in grocery stores?
Think about places that you go to that are like, even around here, like places like Woodbury Kitchen that'll say only source like, and they list like the farms on the thing or they list where their ingredients are procured from because it's so small and local that it's significant to them.
Right.
Like, and I'm sure there are some grocery stores like that too. Not mine. Mine's like, get the shit.
So you find out that Alex Wolf's, and I think his name is Amir, I believe is his character's name. And he was just, you know, throughout the entire time they're trying to chase this pig down, you know, a friendship sort of blossoms between the two of them. And you find out about how, you know, his mom killed herself or committed suicide or something. But like right after she was in like a kind of a loveless marriage to his father. And the only time he ever saw her happy was after eating at one of his restaurants or something like that. So like that's
something like that, yeah.
Like this, like the level of esteem you got here, right? So then they go see like Chef Boyardee or whoever the guy is that's in charge of all the food.
Pretty sure it was Chef Boyardee.
Chef Boyardee.
Don't hear everybody.
Hi.
Amir's father, and they find out that like he took the pig, and he took the pig because Amir told him about the pig, because Amir is trying to do anything he possibly can to connect with this man, because it's like a terrible loveless family situation, right? And he didn't realize that all this bad shit was going to happen. Then the guy has basically told him, he told Nick Cage to go fuck off. And if you don't, I'm going to give you $25,000 for the pig. Go back to your shed. And if you come around here again, I'm going to cut the pig up into bacon. And once again, Goggs is like, oh, the violence is finally going to happen. And the violence doesn't happen. They leave, and his response, Nick Cage's response, is to cook a meal. So then he goes and he sources, you find out that his wine collection is being held at a mausoleum where you find out his dead wife is buried. Nick Cage's dead wife is buried. And he goes and visits this baker who he must have held at like the most respect.
She makes one specific loaf of bread.
She makes a salted baguette.
Yeah. I'm not gonna lie, that sounds absolutely fucking delightful.
It sounds tremendous.
Oh, absolutely. 100%. Bread rocks.
And then he meets with her.
This is a pro bread podcast right here.
Yeah, 100%. Audi by bread over here.
Amen to that.
So then they have this beautiful, quiet scene, in this bakery with like this sort of weird, like respect and heaviness. And you can kind of tell like how distant they, like Nick Cage before he leaves gives her like half a hug, but like what seemed to be probably in just the language of the film, like the biggest compliment he could possibly give another human being was not only wanting her bread specifically, but then he like saw like some hand pies or tarts or something she was putting out.
Yeah.
And he asked for one, or she gave him one, and he said, can I have another? And not only did he like just take another one, he inspected it and picked the right one out and just knew that that was like, that met his approval, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
And then he shares that with Alex Wolf, which is just like, in any other situation, it's innocuous, but coming from this person, it carries so much weight. So then they go and they sneak into.
I also, before we leave this scene, again, like this is to establish like the history with his wife and everything. And this baker has a connection to his wife, but I like the little nods, like where he's like walking out and he's like, oh, you took the curtains down. And she's like, yeah, whatever his wife's name, she hated him. Lori hated him. And he's like, yeah, they're right. And like, I love just the little things like that, little touches.
You really buy that, like, And they're very smart about how they do it, like how much he loved her.
Yes.
And like, it's very human. And like those little, cause that's the things you remember, right? Are those little things. Oh, she didn't like sandals or whatever the fuck.
Yeah.
It's not all these like, big bombastic.
Exactly. I feel like in so many other movies, like that when they, like the fucking 2024 like the Crow I talked about. Yeah. Like they tried so hard to like try to establish a connection between two characters that it just doesn't seem genuine or organic. And I feel like this movie, its sparsity, it feels way more emotionally resonant. But you know what I mean?
That's why you buy Eric Draven in the original Crow, which I just watched again for the millionth time. It's because you only get these little pieces of their relationship. I think the movie would suffer more if you spent all that time with them and then had to cram in all the vengeance at the end.
Oh, it does.
Because you see it through his point of view, just like you see Nicolas Cage's wife strictly through his point of view, and just like the most like bare memory. Exactly. Sorry, I didn't mean to get into a crew thing.
No, I mean, it's a good comparison because Yeah, you weren't on, but I talked about the new one, and it's horrible.
So you eventually find out, well, actually, you found out earlier, I skipped over this part, that Amir's mom isn't actually dead, but she's, like, in hospice or some sort of, like, perpetual care or something.
Gary Oldman and Hannibal.
Yeah.
Yeah. She got fed to truffle pigs.
And,
Oh no, my truffle wife.
They sneak into the Amir's dad's house, and this is also like a beautiful scene of like making this meal with like between Amir and Nick Cage and like sort of this connection that they have through this moment. And then they serve it to the dad. And then, you know, the dad takes two bites and just loses his shit because this was the meal that was the last beautiful moment he had with his own wife before she tried to kill herself. And he just like emotionally nuked him. And then he breaks down. He's like, the fucking junkies killed your pig. I'm sorry. Like, I can't, like, I give you back your pig if I could, but I fucking can't. I'm sorry. And then you hear, then Nick Cage goes into a lament akin to losing a child. Like, it is so wrought with emotion and power, and he just fucking loses it. And then there's
the only connection he has anymore, right? Like,
right, I mean, it's all he's got. He loves the, he even tells, he tells Alex Wolff, he's like, I don't even need the pig to find the truffles. The trees tell me. Right. I just love the pig, right? Like, so then, once again, no vengeance, no nothing, no fight, no, they get in the car, they go to a diner, the diner doesn't even have pie. They just have fucking brownies and coffee, and Nick Cage is like, all right, I'm going to walk home, I'll see you Thursday. And then, like, but there's a, before he says that, I guess, there's a moment in the diner, which I thought was like, kind of beautiful, where he's like, I keep thinking that if I hadn't go to look for the pig, she would still be alive in my mind. And then Alex Wolff's like, but she's not alive, right? And it's just like lying to yourself versus finding closure and peace. And then it seems like he's found peace at the end. He's like, finally listens to the tape his wife gave him, and he can just like, he can move past the loss and appreciate what he had. And it's, the movie ends. It's awesome. It's like, nothing I ever thought I would like.
I don't want to interrupt you, but like the thing that was sat with me while I was watching this movie, because this is a Gog's movie. Like the setup, the food shit, everything. It's like, and then the vengeance, but the vengeance never comes. Right. I didn't know how you were going to respond to that.
We
talked about that briefly before you got on. Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No.
No, that's cool. And like the whole anti revenge. Cause that I was, like I said, I told TJ and Alec, I was like reading articles about this, and it was like it's an anti-revenge movie. And I was like, that's a perfect way of saying it. Like it's just some dude dealing with it, but not dealing with it in a movie way. Like in a movie way, there's like chest kicks and shit.
Yeah.
And this is just.
Cause it's set up to be John Wick.
It is, right? And but what it is actually probably the most realistic and human way that someone would have dealt with this. And it's just.
I'm sorry.
No, you go ahead.
I mentioned this in a text because I like sent in a text thing because I wasn't sure I was going to be able to get on because the kids keep getting abused. But fucking, there's something, and maybe, I don't know if it's just for our generation, there's something like almost like magical and like I'm trying to think of a less pretentious word than ethereal about the analog cassette of her voice.
Yeah.
Because nothing sounds like that anymore. You know what I mean? Like, we have LPs again, and you're used to digital. But there's something just, like, old and encapsulated about the tape that I found, like, super affecting. I don't know. Maybe it's just me. Maybe it's just the...
Yeah, no, I definitely agree.
No, now that you're here, though, I want to ask one thing about your critique. Because one of the things you said is you're tired of the... I don't have my phone near me, so I don't know if anyone can read the actual words that you said. But it sounded like something akin of you just don't like the hyper elevation of food culture.
Is that sort of the gist?
Yeah, but I think in the movie they don't like it either. Like Nick Cage says as much.
Yeah, but he's still like, but the still, it still revolves around it. You know what I mean? Like that's,
it does revolve around it.
The whole scene where he's like dressing down the other chef, not because like food culture is itself stupid, but because the direction he went in is not suitable. You know what I mean? That was my read of it. And it's just like,
I thought his read of that scene was dressing him down, not because what he was doing wasn't suitable. It's like, do what you want to do. Don't do what they want you to do. Like you're doing what they want you to do because you think that's going to give you status or power. None of these people matter. They don't give a shit about you. They don't care about this. Do what makes you happy. And I feel like that's the anti-message.
You're probably right. Go ahead.
You didn't find, I mean, again, we talked about this a little bit, but you didn't find that they're like food, the way they brought in like food culture was kind of similar to like the menu where it's kind of like, I think they're pointing at it to like make fun of it. Well, like, I mean, especially also, with like the like.
I'm sorry, real dumb. So the menu is very explicit about what it's about. And
that,
I feel like
that is very true. Yeah.
And like it could just be, this might just be a bugaboo, RIP RG3 for me with like the idea of culture in general, because like I can think of a million meals I've had with you guys that were like $3 and like I bring the same thing back and it didn't involve shaving truffles and ingredients that are foam for some reason and shit like that. But just that whole like exaltation of chefs I find personally abhorrent. And how it leads to gentrification and other things. It's the same problem I have with the second season of The Bear. You know what I mean? But I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, I think that's almost what Nick Cage is getting at when he's talking to that chef. He's like, you wanted to make a pub. What did you want to make? He's like, I wanted to make scotch eggs. He's like, there you go.
Those are good.
Just make scotch eggs then. You don't have to make a deconstructed scallop with a fucking pine foam.
And you guys are probably right. And I don't, you know, I'm projecting onto the movie more than what's in
you're bringing in your woke cultural attitude to this film.
Bias.
Yeah. Alec, was your favorite part of the movie the salted baguette?
Actually, yeah.
I was salted baguette.
Like, when I saw that that term come up with a thing, I was like, salted baguette, like,
sounds so good,
like a nice crusty baguette with a soft inside, but like I'm imagining
like rock
spray
salt.
It with a little bit of water and like Himalayan sea salt or something on the outside, so you get a little salty crust every time you take a bite. Like that sounds incredible. Like I want to go find that like IRL.
I want IRL bread.
Sounds incredible.
Hey, nope, TJ, I don't want
IRL bread. I want fake movie bread.
TJ, I'm sorry. I didn't hear, obviously, the first part of it. Did you end up seeing Strange?
I'll see it this weekend. I didn't get a chance to see it. I wanted to, but I chose The Crow instead.
Oh, classic boner.
Yeah, I wanted to see Strange Darling. I don't know.
Apparently, Giovanni Ribisi shot it on 35.
I didn't even know it was his movie. I didn't. He didn't direct it.
He just shot it. Like
Weird.
Yeah. Right.
That is very odd. No, I'm looking forward to it. I think I talked about it a while ago. The trailer looked like fascinating. So.
Yeah.
Well, anyway. I do want to know what Alex thought. Alec, did you like, what are your thoughts?
Well, I mean, this is what we do.
I want to hear before the rating. I just wanted to generally. Or not.
It was good. No, I liked it. I liked it a lot more than I thought I would. A lot more than I thought I would before starting the movie. Like about 5 minutes in, I was like, oh, I think I'm really going to like this. First of all, because it's an hour and a half long.
Right.
Second of all, like his technique at the beginning and the way the movie started reminded me, I really don't know quite what it reminded me of, but of some similar type movies. It's not Apostle, But there was something else that came out around that same time that I feel like had a very similar visual way it started with like the way you see the trees and the way you see the water and stuff like that. I can't think. Was it maybe The Ritual?
That movie's great too. Yeah, around the same time. Like that movie a lot.
And visually, it reminded me a lot of that, even though it's completely different subject matter.
I could definitely see that.
But yeah, I just wish it had more of the pig.
Yeah, you didn't really get to a lot of the pig. He's in it for like 2 seconds.
Yeah, I was sad that he died, but at least I didn't have to see him die like in a lot of movies.
Yeah, thankfully no.
Because that would have dropped this immediately to a zero.
No pig violence in this movie.
You burnt?
No, he didn't get burnt. He got mishandled.
Do you think the pig actually died?
I do.
Okay.
Oh, you don't think the pig?
Like died during the filming of the movie, or died?
Not IRL died. I didn't think that Milo and Otis did. I meant in the narrative.
Oh, I think 100% the pig died.
I thought he did. Just how like heartfelt Adam Arkin's reaction was.
Yeah, I agree.
It wasn't well, the pig's dead anyway. So,
right.
He really seemed broken up about it after the dead wife meal.
He seemed very genuinely like repentant and sad about it.
Yeah. Is he related to Alan Arkin?
Yeah, to the kid.
It's his husband.
Oh shit. Yeah, shout out to Alan Arkin.
Big ups.
I think there's a third Arkin as well.
Is there really?
How many Arkins?
It's a real Noah's Arkin.
It's a real Baldwin sitch. Too many Baldwin.
Oh, there's he's got a brother Anthony Arkin. Matthew Arkin.
Shout out to Matt Arkin.
All right. Anything else, guys, before we get into Five Knuckle Shuffles? Sean.
I think I originally was going to give this an 8, but I think you guys beat me down to a 9.
Nice.
Because, like, again, I brought a lot of my own shit into it. It is a very unusual thing for, like, the aggrieved character to just have grace at the end of it. And, like, I don't know that I've seen that. I can't recall seeing a movie that's structured like this that ends the way it does, which I think, you know, you talk about, you know, a good subversion of your expectation. Because the entire movie is leading up to that moment. And it never happens.
Right.
But not in a shitty.
This is the proper way to subvert your expectations.
Yeah, it looks great. Cage is fantastic. I mean, like, it's a really good movie, man. Like, I was very surprised. I didn't know what to expect. I knew nothing about it. Small cast. Like, it is also, like, weird in the ways that I think we appreciate. Like, the Fight Club part that's, like, just almost nonsensical and kind of unnecessary.
Out of left field.
But still feels totally integral. Like, I bought it. Okay. Like, we're in some kind of heightened reality. I can roll with this.
Yeah, it's also something where you feel like it's so early in the movie, you're like, okay, there's going to be a lot of sequences like this, and that's right,
for Nicolas Cage is, like, super tough, so, okay, he's going to go nuts, and, like, there's going to be machetes, and, like, you know, you're waiting
for the... He was going to turn, like, a Scott Pilgrim, and he was going to have to, like, fight his way through, like, 7 levels of chefs to get to his pig, but no.
He has to fight...
7 evil chefs.
Yeah. He has to fight evil sous chefs.
But it looks great. It's short, which I appreciated. I just like the food culture thing, man. Like, I don't roll with it. I just can't. But I will accept that it is probably a critique of same, but I still
You heard it here, folks. Here first, folks. Sean hates food.
Correct. I mean, I used to when I was in better shape, but like, it's got, if it is an unabashed critique of that, it's got the same problem that the Fight Club movie does, where it's like, I don't think it's explicit enough to not get the wrong message. And again, I am dumb, but I'm going to lay it a 9. I think that's good. Alec.
I'm also going to give it a 9. I liked this a lot. I thought Nick Cage is, like, excellent. Which is the two excellent Nick Cage's performances in a row for me, because the last thing I saw him in was The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent, and he's excellent in that great. Too.
Yeah.
Just two bangers, two Cage bangers in a row for him, for me. Alex Wolff, who is really good in this. I've never seen most of the other stuff he's been in. I've never seen any of those horror movies he's been in or anything. But he's excellent in this. I forgot who Adam Arkin was until he showed up, and I was like, oh, yeah, it's that guy. Because he was, I think he was a doctor on Chicago Hope.
Shout out to Chicago Hope, bro.
The second medical show, the sexy sister show to ER that never got any of the accolades or anything. Because it didn't have George Clooney, but he was supposed to be like the George Clooney analog, and he's just not George Clooney.
Take that.
Yeah, take that, Adam Arkin.
You bitch.
You burnt.
You bitch. That's such a funny insult to think so.
I thought the scene where he's dressing down his former sous chef, like, you can see, like, that guy, I don't know who he is, but he was excellent and had, like, 2 minutes on screen. Because you can see him just getting more and more panicked. You can see in his eyes and his smile that he's just, like, about to lose it a little more every second.
Oh, he's got that Joker grin.
Yeah, and he just, like, he's like, oh, God. Yeah.
It's like a traumatized child that's brought back to, like he's just had everything taken away from him again.
But he was excellent in his little role. Like, all the people who – all the, like, little side characters – world, they're only in it for a minute. We're all very good. The director's Blaps, 2 for 2, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, now I really want to see. I really want to see that third Quiet Place movie now.
Yeah, two.
He directed the third Quiet Place, Sean. The newest one that just came out.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and that's excellent. I saw that and I reviewed that earlier, Sean. That movie slaps. If you like the first two, I would imagine you'll like this one.
I didn't see the second one, but you and I saw the first one, right? Together.
I believe so.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure we did. Because we saw it in a theater where it was actually quiet, and TJ saw it.
Yeah, and unlike TJ, next to a
that was so bad. Oh, God. It was like Ready Player One or something, I think.
It was.
So
yeah, good. That's what you said. It was Ready Player One. Hey, but yeah, I give it a... What?
I'm gonna let you finish.
I was just gonna say it's a 9. I thought it was excellent. I don't know what I would change about it to make it a little better to give it that 10, but it's not quite a 10. Not everything can be a 10.
Yeah, that's fair.
Hey, Gogs. Well, I got you on the phone. Did you and I go see You Were Never Really Here, like, at the Charles? Does that ring a bell?
I thought we watched it at my house.
We didn't go to, like, the crate place next to the fucking theater?
I don't think so.
Okay. Sorry, I was just dissociating the other day. Go ahead.
Wait, hold on, wait. Is that the one with Joker and the hammer?
Yeah.
Yeah, that is correct. We did do that.
That movie rocks.
I was thinking about, I'm sorry, Safety Not Guaranteed. I don't know why. They just both have weird titles.
Another good movie.
Yeah, it is.
What happened to Colin Trevorrow?
I guess Kathleen Kennedy murdered him or something.
Yeah. All right. Who's left?
I don't know. So somebody just go.
Gogs and TJ. Do it at the same time.
I'll go real quick. Okay, quick. No, that was that. Yeah, I texted when I didn't think I was necessarily going to make the show. That was an 8. And as I talked through the movie again, I brought myself to a 9. This movie is really good. It's weird. And like, it's a movie that I never
bring yourself to a 9.
Oh my God. So does Liz. So she just settled for a 4 at this point.
Four and a half.
The,
I'll take a soft 3.
God, swinging big there. It's a movie that I never, like, when TJ explained the premise to this, I was like, oh, that's going to be terrible. And then leading into it, I was like, this is going to be, what is this going to be, a fucking mess? And then it's this beautiful, quiet meditation of loss. And like, it's just, it's like, it's, the setup is so strange, but the message just hit home, and it's so well directed. It's beautifully shot. It's Nick Cage. Everyone's fucking just acting their ass off. It's much like Alec. I don't understand why it's not a 10, but it's not. There's something, I don't know what it is, but it is great. It is, and it's, as a guy who loves vengeance, loves revenge, loves a good Wickian fucking fight him up.
As an honorary South Korean.
Right? Like I love excessive violence for unnecessary reasons. And the fact that this never goes there and I still am holding this in such high esteem is wild to me, but I love it. I think this movie is great. Like this movie, and I'm sad I had not seen it up until this point. It's awesome. TJ.
It's a 9 for me, dog. I'd like to
certified good ass movie.
I'd like to circle back to the first time I watched this movie, like, did not resonate with me at all. And I, much like when we talked about Children of Men, I don't really understand. I mean, I must have just been like a bad mood or something. I don't know, because I love this movie. Everything works. I like we joked around and said, like, the entire movie is subverting your expectations, but like, it's really nice to have a movie that's like, I don't know, like anti-violence. Like I also love like insanely violent movies, and I love vengeance, and but it's kind of nice to have this like quiet, like sad, but ultimately I would say it's more like bittersweet than like explicitly, like, it's not depressing, like, cause it does kind of have like it has almost like a happy ending. I mean, as happy as you can be, like, it's about a guy that's like made peace with his life and with his past. And I don't know. It's like it's a very refreshing movie, right? Like it, and I think like not only, you know, we've talked about how the initial premise is definitely leading you into the John Wick, but I feel like the visual style is very like dark and grim, yeah. And the poster is very grim, and it definitely sets you up for the expectation that you're about to watch like a bloodbath.
Like if he had spent the whole movie killing people with a cleaver and turning them into sausage, you'd be like, yeah, okay.
Or like in a lesser movie, like the dad serves him the pig or some shit. You know what I mean? You know.
And it also is trading a little bit, I think, on your expectation of Nicolas Cage.
Because absolutely. That's
the kind of movie he does, especially, right. You know, the last 10 years.
Yeah, it's stunt casting for sure, but he knocks it out of the park. He's so good in this movie. I mean, it's really great. It's very unique. I thought all the performances were really well done. Again, it's a very small movie. Like it timeline wise, it takes place in a very short amount of time. Character wise, there's not a whole lot of people in the movie. Like I really liked it. I liked it a lot, and I think it's
budget.
Like,
budget $4 million, box office $3 million.
Wow,
that's Nicholas Cage's salary $2.5 million.
He got to keep the pig. That's all it was.
Well, it had. I mean, it's a neon movie, so it had probably like an insanely limited box office run. It's not like it probably wasn't even wildly released. Brought that back.
Bro, it's a movie that's just called Pig. Like, what do you do with that?
Yeah, but neon stuff only. I mean, I think Long Legs is like the biggest neon release, like by like a lot. And I think Long Legs made like $60 or $70 million, which in the grand scheme of like, you know, Wolverine, Deadpool, that's right. Nothing. You know what I mean?
No, that it ends with us. It made like $250 million already, and you couldn't pay me to watch that movie.
What was it? What's that character's name? It's like Ryle. Ryle.
Ryle. Dude, when we saw the trailer for that. Because you and I saw it, right? It was like,
yeah, you
I
and
thought
I.
It was like a fake, like, I thought it was like a fucking, like, hemorrhoids commercial. Like a fake trailer.
Oh, it's real. Alright, so Pig, certified good-ass movie. Go watch it. It's really, really good. So who's got next week's pick?
Alec or Sean.
Yeah. Alec, you got one in the chamber?
No, but next week technically starts the next month. So we can go either way. I don't even know what September is.
Next month is Stoptember. It's all stop motion animation movies.
Good lord.
That's a good one. Oh, I thought you'd be excited about that one. I got a pick for that.
I was picking Coraline.
That's what I was going to pick.
Oh, shit.
Hell yeah, that's fine. I love that movie.
Off to a bad start.
I love it. You don't like, wait, you love that movie.
No, I do, but we already have disagreement.
Oh, I already have I have a second one in the chamber, so it's all good. And no, Sean, it's not Mad God.
It's not Nine, is it?
No, it's, because I've never watched it. I've heard a lot of good things. My, second pick is Kubo and the Two Strings, because it looks really interesting.
I see that.
Yeah.
Well, if we're doing Pig, I want to pick that anime that I can't ever remember what it's called, but it's called like Porcaro or something.
Oh, Puyo Rosa?
You know what I'm talking about. Yeah. Porco Rosa?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're watching. Okay. We can watch that. I don't care.
Okay, let's watch that. It should be easy.
Hold on. What is the name of that? Studio. It's like the hard to find Studio Ghibli movie, but I think I already have it on the Plex. It is called Porco Rosso.
Yeah.
And I believe it's about like a World War I like fighter pilot or something.
Yeah.
I
don't know. It's the sexy sister film to the Guardians of the Ghoul.
I've never seen it. I've seen a handful of Studio Ghibli movies now, but yeah. I've never seen that. So I'm excited to watch that. All right, cool. Next week, some fucking anime for your ass and butts. Porco Rosso. So yeah, looking forward to that.
Okay.
All right, everybody. A lot of eat your own butts and ass and suck one.
What's that fry? Wasn't a Will Ferrell thing? He was trying to do new Bud Light slogans. He's like, Bud Light, suck one.
Suck one. Pretty good.